This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All statements and opinions expressed by guests of the Adult in the Room podcast are strictly their own and do not necessarily reflect the beliefs or opinions of the host, producers, or advertisers. All interviews are presented in their most complete possible form in the interests of free speech. No statements should be interpreted as financial, legal, or medical advice. Listener and viewer discretion are strongly advised.
It's the Adult in the Room podcast with Victoria Taft. That's me.
Another week that we're going to talk about guns. That's right, guns and the legality thereof, the rights that we have in this under the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and much more, because it's all going to hit the fan. Why? Well, as I explained last week, it all has to do with, sure, the Bruin decision, but it also has more to do, I believe, with the Dobbs decision and the left's anger about that, and then choosing to lash out in anger at anything that may just cross swords with the left. So that's just it. That's what's going on. Plus, they hate Clarence Thomas, the person who wrote the majority opinion on the Bruin decision, and so much more. But I bring in the expert, and Chuck Michel of the California Rifle and Pistol Association is that expert, and he's been at the front lines of all of the major gun battles, if you will, in court, in politics. And he's the leader of that organization, the general counsel, and he is a person to, well, if you see his name on a lawyer letter, you might want to, well, you probably might want to just take a breath and take it seriously. Chuck Michel, welcome to the Adult in the Room podcast. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
There's so much to talk about. I guess the general question to begin with would be, what is the state of play currently following the Bruin decision on California and other states' gun rights? Because as goes California, goes the rest of the country.
The answer to that is a mouthful, because there's a lot going on all across the country. What it comes down to is the folks who want to ban guns, eventually disarm guns, take away essentially all the guns from people because they believe in a big government approach to society. And they think that the government can solve all our problems and we should place our safety and security in their hands. They don't like Bruin at all. And there has been a nationwide, in all the battleground states, all the blue or purple states, backlash, a vindictive and retaliatory backlash, orchestrated to a large extent by Michael Bloomberg's Everytown group, and he has a specific group, Everytown Law, that you can look at him on the web, on the internet, that is spoon-feeding laws and then helping attorneys generals in those states defend challenges to those laws across the country. So you're seeing in California, there was almost two dozen bills signed by Governor Newsom the other day. The two that got the most attention were the sensitive places law that makes it impossible to drive across town with your license to carry a firearm in public without breaking the law because you pass through a gun-free zone that they've newly designated. And the other one was the excise tax. But you've seen a number of those expansive sensitive places laws where CCWs are practically useless across this country, and a number of semi-auto bans, and a number of standard capacity magazine bans. Those are sort of their centerpieces, but they're also trying to ban advertising firearms, advertising the shooting sports. There's always been, or there has been for quite a while, a movement, ultra-progressive movement, to stigmatize gun ownership, demonize gun owners, make it as difficult and expensive to buy a gun, to use a gun, to possess a gun, to defend your family. And that's not stopping, despite Bruin. Now, a lot of these laws that they're passing are being struck down. Believe it or not, some of these advertising bans are being struck down on First Amendment grounds rather than Second Amendment grounds.
Interesting.
So we're now using the First Amendment to defend the Second.
Which is unusual.
Well, it's kind of backwards the way you would expect that when they started stifling free speech and your other rights, the Second Amendment is sort of the last option. But it's part of the cultural war. This is culture side. They want to eliminate the gun culture, eliminate gun ownership, take it out, not let children be exposed to it so that in a generation at least, guns won't be accepted. And the stakes are that high. I mean, it's about, to me, the Second Amendment is the tip of the spear for freedom and our heritage. And this is about a fight over where this country is going to go. It's a fight for how we should be governed and how much individuality we should have. And so it's a fight for America's soul.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely true. Individualism is not revered by the left. In fact, it's reviled by the left. Belonging to a group of believers of all kinds of isms, socialism, communism, and anti-Americanism, that's their tribe. And our tribe is one in which we have a melting pot society that is governed by the Constitution. And among those things are the explicit rights of the government not to interfere with your ability to keep and bear arms. And that's just the bottom line. And unfortunately, they don't like it because they want to be in power. And if you have a gun, you can fight back. So Gavin Newsom said the other day that these gun laws that he was signing into law brought to him on a silver platter by Everytown, as well as his two-thirds majority Democrat legislature. So he's got a supermajority delivered on a silver platter to him. And he called the taxes on guns and ammo sin taxes.
Right. Yeah. Except that buying a gun, choosing to own a gun to defend yourself or your family is not a sin. And gun owners are not sinners. You don't have sin taxes are typically tobacco or alcohol. You don't have a constitutional right to buy a pack of cigarettes or bottle a liquor. You do have a constitutional right to buy a gun. So to me, that tax, it's an 11% excise tax on guns and ammunition. It's a poll tax. It's like charging someone to vote. You can't charge people to exercise a constitutional right, at least not anything beyond sort of incidental fees, you know. But in California, there's $37 basically worth of fees tacked to every gun purchase for a background check and all the other things that they stick you with. And now there'll be an 11% tax on top of an existing 11% federal tax under Pittman-Robinson. But that money, see, goes to conservation programs. So hunters pay that tax, and then that money is used to build wildlife habitat and keep hunting sustainable. What they want to use these dollars for, and they're estimating about $150 million will be raised by this tax annually, is basically crime prevention. And, you know, the thing that irks me, right.
Wait. Let me just appreciate this for a moment. These are the same people who have been letting criminals out under measures 57, 47, and AB, what's the AB, whatever, the assembly bill that has started this whole ball rolling. They've been letting these guys out. We have hot and cold running crooks all over the place. People getting jacked up, retail theft rings. We've got people being murdered, and they're going to use this for crime prevention, are they? Really?
Right. I mean, and my thought is, you know, California has a $31 billion annual budget. If these programs were such a great idea, and this is your big priority is, you know, gun safety, so-called, of course, none of this is about gun safety, and school violence prevention, hardening schools. If these were such great ideas, why didn't you do them already? I mean, why are you saying we can't do these unless we tax the gun owners to fund these programs, which should be coming out of the general fund. I mean, what gun owners don't pay for shouldn't be singularly charged with trying to pay for the response to gun violence by gangs, which is where most of it happens. So it's not about gun safety. It may turn into a boondoggle for the gun ban advocacy groups that will apply for this money, I'm sure, but it's not about, it's about pricing people out of the market. And that's one of their strategies to try and eliminate gun ownership.
Yeah. So they have, they're playing with house money. The government gets to defend itself against lawsuits and to go on the offense in PR strategy in the court of public opinion using other people's money. But you, California Rifle and Pistol Association, Chuck Michelle, you have to raise the money to fight these things. And they just want to bleed the other side dry.
Right. And it's no secret in the halls of the Capitol that's part of their strategy. They want to overwhelm us so that we can't possibly fight every battle that they put out there for us to fight. And so the good thing that's come out of this is that the gun rights advocacy groups, Gun Owners of America, Second Amendment Foundation, Gun Owners of California, Second Amendment Law Center, a number of other groups have kind of come together now, and we're sort of sharing our resources so that we can make our donation dollars go farther and fight more of these laws. So we've already filed, for example, on the Senate Bill 2, the sensitive places expansion. CRPA and GOA and SAF already filed a lawsuit. We filed it before Newsom even signed it. We were the first to file 2 weeks before he even signed it because we knew he was going to sign it. And so that we just didn't serve. We served the state, you know, an hour after he signed it. And we've already got a briefing schedule set up to try and put a stop to that in the United States District Court. So, you know, that's the sad thing about this, or the frustrating thing about this, is that the court system, even when you're going for an injunction and you don't take a case all the way through till trial, you know, taking a case, going through a trial in any court can take a year, 2-3 years, you know. So you're going right up front for an injunction. That shortens that process to 60 or 90 days. But then inevitably the state appeals, the attorneys general appeal, and then you have to litigate on appeal. And so we have several cases in the Court of Appeals now. The one that people have heard the most about is the Duncan case, which we got a great ruling from the United States District Court in San Diego, Judge Benitez, striking down that magazine. Again, that case had a tortured procedural path. We won in front of Judge Benitez. We went up to the Court of Appeals. We won in front of a 3-judge panel. Then they took the case en banc for an 11-judge panel. We lost 7-4. We took it to the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sat on it until after they ruled on Bruin. And then they vacated the lower court's ruling and sent it back down to them and said, you need to reconsider your ruling in light of what we just said in Bruin. The en banc panel sent it back down to Judge Benitez, and he gave the state every chance to try and put historical analogs in there. Remember, that's the test. You know, the Bruin test is the conduct that's being regulated covered by the text of the Second Amendment? And almost everything is. That's the right to keep, which is possess, and carry, which is, and bear, which is carry. Almost everything is covered by that, including, by the way, range activities, accessories, gunsmithing, hunting, target shooting. It's not just guns for self-defense. It's all the related things that go into firearms ownership in this country is all covered by the Second Amendment. So once that's covered, then the burden shifts to the government to try and find some old law around the time that they passed the Bill of Rights in 1791 that is similar to a modern law that would indicate that the founding fathers would have accepted a modern law when they passed the Second Amendment. So the struggle then for states is to try and find these laws, these historical laws, that would indicate that the modern law is constitutional. And there are no gun bans in history. They never banned a whole class of magazines or a whole class of semi-automatic firearms, or, you know, they would regulate sometimes where a gun could be, you know, and how it might have to be carried. But they never did a flat-out ban, which is what many of the states are trying to do now. And they never had restrictions on where you could carry a firearm, generally speaking. They could never get away with condemning half the state as sensitive so that you were banned from possessing firearms there back when we passed the Second Amendment.
You know, I always kind of wonder about, you know, because First Amendment, that's the most revered amendment of the Constitution. It's number one for a reason. And of course, it has several different portions to it. But there is an allowance by the government to conduct, put constraints on it, time, place, and manner constraints. So what kinds of time, place, and manner, or whatever the analogs are to the Second Amendment, could there be or are there currently on guns?
Well, sometimes historically, you mean?
Just now. I mean, what are they doing now? You could go historically now.
Well, the big thing is, with public carry is concealed or open. So there were circumstances historically where the founding fathers said, you got to carry it open or you can't carry it open. And so we think modern day laws could, the legislature could say it's got to be carried concealed or it's got to be carried openly, but they can't ban both. You have to be able to carry it somehow. So, and in some instances, you have to be able to carry it openly, especially in, lesser populated areas. But that's the kind of restriction. That's the kind of matter of carry that the government might have the authority to regulate, but they can't just simply say, your permit is only good, in your house and your front yard. And the other thing they try and do is, we call it the vampire provision, is say that in order for you to take a gun into private property, that private property, like a retail store, has to be posted that says guns allowed. Well, the reality is gun retailers are not going to post a sign that says guns allowed. If they don't want guns there, they would post a sign that said no guns allowed. And the legislators know that. That's why they want to make people post the guns allowed sign, because they know many people won't. So effectively, they ban it from most public places. So this is the games they play.
Yeah, wasn't that just one of the many signed into law by Gavin Newsom just
recently?
Oh, yeah,
he signed almost 24.
So that is an opt-in on the part of the different markets and, anybody with private property, they can put a sign on. It's sort of like a take on how many, people put up signs saying no guns in this house, or we don't agree with whatever. And keep going, because they'll go to your house first, because you won't be able to fight back criminals.
Yeah.
But so they've decided to make this a big joke. And that means that these companies or private citizens or what have you have to opt in to say, well, I allow guns. Now, where did that come from? Was it just born of that, the jokes made by the right about these signs that people put in their lawns or what?
No. I'm sure this was something that the Bloomberg's legal team came up with, or at least facilitated, because they know it will effectively mean that most private places, you won't be able to take your CCW will be no good. And they're trying to make as many places as possible gun-free zones. And because they know that, people will not be inclined to post a sign that says you can bring your gun in here. Some places will, but the average store who's not really engaged in the issue, they're not going to go out of their way to post that sign. And Newsom and his, politician cronies in rigged Sacramento, they knew that. This is designed to just make it so your CCW is effectively useless. And then they try and put a bunch of new qualifications in place before you can get a CCW. They're going to review your social media. You need 3 character references. You need, they just put so, and they're going to, and it's going to cost more. So they just put so many hurdles in the way and so much red tape. They want to red tape the right to death. Again, it's all about, they want to try every angle to try and make it as difficult and expensive to acquire and possess a firearm, and then as effectively make that firearm as effectively useless as they can for self-defense. And they're creating victims in the process. That's the sad, the terrifying thing about this. You know, we always hear about, and we sympathize with, the victims of violent criminals. Obviously, you know, I'm a parent. I don't want my sons getting hurt in school or anywhere else. But if you don't give people the opportunity to choose to possess the most effective tool to defend themselves and their families, you're disempowering them and empowering the criminal, because they will always have the gun. They couldn't care less about whether they carry it in a gun-free zone. So we're at a these laws put us at a disadvantage and cost the lives of victims who can't defend themselves.
In Oregon, they're talking about, of course, there's a case that's been adjudicated, just finished up in Harney County in Oregon. I'm sure you're very familiar with this, as well as having a federal court opinion, which looked like it was written by the Fonnie Willis of the federal judicial bench. But permit to purchase, is that legal? Is that constitutional?
Well, it's a license. It's a license. There's a challenge to Illinois' firearm owner identification card going on in the FOID card going on in Illinois right now. So that's arguably it's not legal. You can't there's never been historical laws that registered firearms that never there's never been now background checks. There were some laws that disarmed people who were violent or showed a tendency to be violent. But they were individualized. So this kind of gets you into the Rahimi case that's in front of the Supreme Court right now. And I've been sitting here this morning watching all the amicus briefs being filed in the Supreme Court, there's, I think, 14 so far on our side. Today's the deadline. And so this is the big question. This is why Rahimi becomes sort of a double-edged sword, because he's not the poster child for gun rights by any means. But that law and the law against cannabis users having firearms and certain misdemeanors, nonviolent felonies, all these other classifications. I mean, the only historical analogs for these are where we disarmed Native American Indians, indigenous peoples, and freed slaves. So there were racist times where we passed racist. Well, by the way, neither of those were really around the time of 1791. But. The government, when it wanted to disempower a politically unpopular group so they could steamroll over them, would ban the gun from them from possessing firearms. So what we've argued in our briefs is that it needs to be individualized. You can't just ban a class, because it's so easy to just create a new class. You know, what are we going to have? Paramilitary patriots, you know, Trump supporters? You know, I mean, who's going to be banned as a class next? So the stakes are high in Rahimi, though, because he's not a sympathetic character, and bad facts can make bad law.
Yeah, exactly. He's a domestic violence guy. Is that right? I can't remember.
He had a restraining order out against him. I mean, he's look, he can't own guns anyway, because he's got criminal cases and convictions, you know, that prohibit him. But he had a restraining order against him, and he possessed a firearm despite the fact that he had that restraining order. And so they charged him with a federal crime for possessing a firearm when you're subject to that kind of a restraining order. But see, some of the briefs in this case point out how that process is abused. There really is. I mean, every family lawyer knows how to take advantage of restraining orders to try and get an advantage in a divorce proceeding. So again, it needs to be individualized, and whoever's making some kind of an accusation against you needs to swear under penalty of perjury that what they're saying is true, so there's some consequences if they lie.
Or are there consequences?
Well, maybe not, but, you know, at least in theory, it'll give them pause before they swear out that you're dangerous. But the point is, we don't want to give firearms to people who are dangerous and violent, but we don't want to take it away from people who aren't. So you have to determine whether or not people are or are not violent on an individual basis, and then restrict their rights because of that, based on, and you have to give them due process.
Yeah, unlike most red flag laws, there's no due process. I mean, this, you're asking for due process. That brings us, of course, to the Hunter Biden situation, in which he has said he's not guilty of lying on his federal forms to get possession of a revolver, although in his notorious pictures on his website, or his, not his website, but his laptop, he's shown with a semi-automatic. I'm told that that supposedly is a fake gun, but I'm not so sure.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Is that what he's now claiming? Well, that was a toy?
Well, Miranda Devine said that she has got the first look at the laptop, and she said that she understood it to be a, you know, like an imposter gun, what have you. But no one else has said it except her. I'm not saying
I haven't heard that, and I doubt it's true. I mean, I don't think he was playing with toy guns as he was fraternizing with prostitutes and doing cocaine. But, here's the thing. Those kind of cases are commonly filed. It's called a lie and buy case. Mm-hmm. A lot of times state courts do it, but the ATF certainly does it. And so, he should be prosecuted for that. And all the other things that there's evidence to show that he broke the law in doing. But
but wouldn't you say that he's part of a class of individuals for whom buying a weapon is out of bounds because he was a crackhead? And he's not a crackhead anymore, and why should he suffer the consequences of his previous heretofore bad?
Well, that's the argument that they're making about cannabis users. They're saying, yes, you know, you can't prohibit someone from owning a gun because, Biden is probably going to make the argument that the statute is unconstitutional as part of his defense in the criminal case.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, would you support that?
It's part of the same argument that's being held in Rahimi right now. It has to be individualized. So is Hunter Biden potentially violent? I don't know. I haven't heard a lot of evidence about him being violent. All kinds of evidence about him being crooked. But I don't know about...
He gets crazy. I mean, he gets angry. But I don't know that he's ever. Well, when he was going out with his sister-in-law turned girlfriend, he definitely exhibited symptoms of emotional abuse at the very least, to the extent that she felt that she needed to get rid of that gun, and she's the one who threw it in the dumpster.
Now, you know, cocaine addiction may be a bit different from marijuana use. I don't know. But there are going to be potentially gradients of this. You know, if someone's convicted of a violent felony, maybe that's easier to disarm them based on that classification. But there's lots of felonies that are not violent, that don't indicate that someone might be violent. And then there's also a lot of misdemeanors that carry gun prohibitions that, you know. So this is probably the stickiest part of the debate that's going on right now, is where do you draw that line? And the gun ban lobby is hoping that some of the justices will take this opportunity to scale back the Bruin test that they just passed a year ago so that it'll be easier to find laws to be constitutional. And so that's why I say it's a double-edged sword. If, on the other hand, if they clarify what the Bruin test meant, because as I said, every town law and all the attorney general's offices that are working with them and coming up with these creative ways to twist the Bruin opinion and misapply what's supposed to be the Bruin test so that more laws can be upheld. That's causing a lot of confusion, and we're getting some bad rulings because the judges are not straightening it out, which is exactly what they did after Heller. It's the same thing. The courts twisted that, implied and imposed the wrong test by which lots of laws could be upheld. And that's what they're trying to do with Bruin. They just want to twist that ruling. So if the court takes the opportunity in the Rahimi case to straighten that out, then we could be seeing a lot more and a lot faster wins because the methodology will be settled.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Strict scrutiny was the game changer for the Bruin decision, though, right?
Well, no, strict scrutiny has been rejected. I mean, that's what we tried to argue in Heller, because they went to this interest balancing. Remember, in certain constitutional right contexts, like the First Amendment, you have rational basis, intermediate scrutiny, strict scrutiny. Under strict scrutiny, almost everything gets struck down. Rational basis.
Oh, I had it exactly backwards. Oops, I messed up last week. So, yeah, no, okay.
Under rational basis, almost everything is found to be constitutional.
Gotcha.
Levels, those tiers of review, that's where the courts used Heller to wrap us around the axle. They weren't supposed to do this interest balancing test,
right?
Which is what each of those are, but they did. And so they got Heller all wrong, and Bruin made it clear that they got Heller all wrong, but now they're getting Bruin all wrong.
On purpose.
Yes, because the court said, no more interest balancing, no more tiers of scrutiny. It's all
one step.
Is it covered by the text of the Second Amendment?
Right.
And is there a historical law that would suggest that the founders would have tolerated the modern law? And that should be fairly simple. I mean, the tricky part should only be what historical laws can be deemed, what historical laws are deemed to be sufficiently similar, and how are they similar to a modern law such that the modern law will survive, will be held to be constitutional. And that's going to be another area that's being twisted by the states that are pushing these laws, because that's how they're trying to win. They know they can't win if they faithfully applied Bruin.
Which is why Judge Benitez, in his federal court opinion in California with respect to the magazine limitations, laid out all of the history pertaining to magazines and and the only thing he came up with, the only constraints on magazines in history was, I can't recall what the year was, but it was a certain year, and the government said, you have to have more than 24 rounds because you're no good to us otherwise.
Right. So you had to muster with 20 rounds at least to be part of the organized militia. So yeah, it's not like we've ever tried to limit the number of rounds. And Judge Benitez just did an absolutely brilliant, artful, and well-documented job in pointing out how full of baloney the state was. You know, they were trying to claim that you don't use a firearm for self-defense unless you actually pull the trigger. Like, I have a handgun in my quick access, open in the dark lockbox next to my bed right now, and I'm using it right now. You know, criminals are deterred because they know that there may be a gun in a household, and just because I don't have the gun in my hand walking around with it doesn't mean I'm not using it for self-defense. But the state's trying to, this is like Bill Clinton saying, it depends what the meaning of is, you know, they're trying to twist what the meaning of use is so that they can say that only certain guns are protected, because the Supreme Court has at least made it clear that guns in common use for self-defense are protected. But that was just because in Heller and McDonald, you were dealing with handguns that were being possessed for self-defense. Nothing in the Bruin or Heller decision says that self-defense is the only right protected by the Second Amendment. So, and nothing in the Heller decision says that only guns in common use are constitutionally protected. So there, you know, might have some $10,000 match grade precision target rifle, and there may only be 1,000 of them in the country. But they're never used by criminals to commit a crime. Those are still protected, even though they're not. They're commonly used for lawful purposes. The common lawful purpose is target shooting, even though it's not common in terms of there's not 200,000 of them in the country, or as there are in the case of stun guns, which we saw in the Catano case, or 20 to 30 million of them, as we have with semi-autos, or a couple of hundred million, as you may have with magazines that hold over 10 rounds. These are all the things, and this is not particularly unusual. These are all the things, the issues that were left unresolved or unclear, or at least muddyable by the states who want to confuse the issue.
Sure, sure.
And maybe the Supreme Court will clear that up in Ramey.
In the Measure 114 case in the state of Oregon, you had the government officials relying on information based on newspaper stories and statistics, not by the FBI, I don't recall, but they were very incomplete statistics showing use of force, defensive force by or defensive use of a weapon by people, just Joe Schmo, people like us. And the statistics seemed a little, dumb. They didn't appear to be complete. They, as you said, only included people who had fired their weapon and that sort of thing. So have those numbers been tossed out in every other court?
They've been criticized, and Judge Benitez rejected the science, the expert's testimony that they tried to use to justify the magazine ban. But this is another part of the fight that we're in. They hold out these historians and empirical scientists, they cook the books. They use these statistics. They weaponize statistics. They twist those as well, cherry pick data to try and justify their laws. That's where folks like Gun Facts, Guy Smith at Gun Facts, and John Lott over at the Crime Prevention Research Center, and some other groups that are, calling, actually looking at how those studies were done and why the conclusions that they're drawing are not legitimate. That's another battle we have to fight. A battle of the statistics and how they're being misconstrued and misrepresented.
Let's listen to Gavin Newsom talking about how we have to do this, all of these new gun laws, which restrict the use of guns on the part of gun owners and for the children.
It's a pretty sick thing that we can just casually say it. And we do casually say it, that the number one killer of our kids is guns. And it's sort of just accepted, and not everybody's sort of stopping saying, well, hold on, can you repeat that? Or wait a second, what more can I hope? I don't want to talk about anything else. We need to solve for that. That it's just somehow so normalized. It's a profound moment. And so I am grateful for this moment. I'm grateful for the many moments that we've had on this stage together in terms of advancing gun safety. But I'm looking forward to raising the bar of expectation and performance.
Is that a true statement that the number one killer of children is guns?
No. No. What's a child? This is how they twist that one. Gangs start recruiting people kids at 10 years old, and you're jumped in at around 14. We have a huge gang violence problem. But do you consider an 18-year-old a child? A 21-year-old a child? They're the ones shooting each other. Mm-hmm. So they've twisted that in several different ways.
I mean, I thought accidents were the number one cause.
Huh?
I thought accidents were the number one cause, but I,
Well,
not
yeah.
Good shots.
Bathtub drownings or pool drownings are more frequent. Kids are being killed by some schoolyard shootout. It's gangs are killing each other over the drug trade, and that is not a unique California problem, but it's certainly exacerbated in San Francisco and Los Angeles and the cities where the gangs are basically most headquartered.
The gun lobby, of which you're a part, is always opposed to public safety. You're always opposed to public safety. How dare you? Guns kill people. It's gun, quote-unquote, gun violence. They're not guns that somebody made like you made an experimental plane. It's a ghost gun. I mean, they use all sorts of scary language and nomenclature to turn the tide of public opinion against the people.
Oh, yeah. And that's because they spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on PR firms helping them shape their message. That's why you come up with terms like assault weapon or high capacity magazine or Saturday Night Special, you know, all that terminology, gun safety. They got rid of gun control. You know, It used to be the Handgun Control Incorporated. Now it's the Brady Center. They changed all those names because they didn't want to alienate people who might be inclined to believe in the right to self-defense. And they wanted to make it about gun safety. Well, it's not about gun safety. It's about gun bans and civilian disarmament. And the flip side of that is you're making us less safe because you're taking away our ability to have a chance. You know, as the saying goes, when seconds count, police are only minutes away. Well, during those few minutes, it's up to you to defend yourself when you're in the thick of things.
When hits the shan.
So, yes.
So part of their strategy is to take a gun apart and then to identify each part as not part of the gun, right? I mean, the magazine is not part of it. We actually had a Washington State federal judge say, well, I didn't know that the magazine was a part of a gun. It doesn't seem to be part of a gun to me. And of course, that's nonsense. It's like saying
it's just as much a part of the gun as the barrel or the trigger is. Can you have a fast functioning trigger ban? You know?
Yeah.
You have to have the right certain number of pounds of pressure on the trigger, or too heavy of a barrel or too light of a barrel ban? I mean, where does this end? They can regulate these features. If they can regulate these features, they can ban the gun. And they know it. So we're really hopeful that the Supreme Court will clarify and strengthen Bruin in their Amy case, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. The other parts of the gun that are at issue right now are what?
Well, probably the pistol brace. That's a big one. The bump stocks. In California, they're trying to say that unless your gun has micro stamping, it can't be sold. And unless it has a magazine disconnect lock and a loaded chamber indicator, it can't be sold. So in addition to saying certain features that your gun may have can be prohibited, they're now trying to say, well, you have to have certain features in order for the gun to be legal. And the manufacturers they don't understand, the gun ban lobby doesn't understand. You have to completely retool your factory to change the assembly process for a firearm to add one of these new features in there if it's not in there to begin with. So it's, you know, but peripheral bans. I mean, it's also gun shows. They want to ban gun shows, gun ranges. They're going after them on lead and
ha, environmental issues.
Oh, yeah.
That is amazing. I'm not surprised.
They're going after hunting. They don't want to have any kind of, they want to go to, it's called the rewilding movement. They want to go back to having so many predator species that the game species are controlled by the predators, never mind that the predator species gets out of control, so that hunting is unsustainable. So there's no need for hunting anymore. They're attacking hunting, they're attacking gun ranges, they're attacking gun shows, any place where people can get together and talk about guns and see they might be fun, go to the range. They're attacking gun retailers, putting all kinds of restrictions and burdensome requirements on them, so it costs more to sell a gun, so they can have to raise the price of the gun for the consumer, so less people can afford it. It's a broad-based attack on every aspect of gun ownership, and again, it's culture side. It's designed to get rid of gun ownership in a generation or sooner, so that there's no way to stop tyranny at the end of the day. If it gets to that point, this is what we fought a Revolutionary War about.
They want to own the message. They want to name the terms. They want to keep your children from learning about gun safety. And I noticed that on your website, the California Rifle and Pistol Association website recently had a decision that allowed, if you will, the gun clubs and youth-oriented gun clubs to be at least still in business.
To advertise. They were trying to ban any advertising basically that promoted the shooting sports. And thankfully we've got that struck down. We'll see if they try and take that, you know, to an 11 judge panel. But again, this is where this is the underlying battle that's going on in all these cases. It's about the methodology. And the Ninth Circuit's probably going to resolve this issue first, either for or against us, unless Rahimi clarifies it. But Rahimi won't come out until June, next June. So the Duncan decision and a couple others in the Ninth Circuit will be decided before then. And they'll either get it right or they'll get it wrong. And some of those judges are already fighting with each other over this.
Yes. Tell me about what happened in the Ninth Circuit.
Well, the Attorney General sought a stay of Judge Benitez's injunction, which would have stopped the enforcement of the magazine capacity limitation law. And so they went to the Ninth Circuit and said, please stay this. The Ninth Circuit said, well, we're going to take this. Remember, I said when it came back from the Supreme Court, it went to the en banc panel. But on the way up, it went Judge Benitez, 3-judge panel, en banc panel, Supreme Court, then back down to the en banc panel, then back down to Judge Benitez. Well, the en banc panel decided, rather than having it go back through a 3-judge panel again, as the normal, they take it straight to the en banc panel. And one of the judges on the en banc panel said, why are you doing that? I mean, and he basically said, the reason you're doing it is because you know the 3-judge panel would uphold Benitez's decision, and you don't like that. So there's infighting. There's some very hardcore Second Amendment supporters on the Ninth Circuit. It used to be heavily stacked Democrats, but the Trump administration got a few more judges in there that have evened up the odds. So, but yes, there's obviously a very split, a big split of opinion amongst the judges on the Ninth Circuit.
So it's not done yet, even though it should be. You know, I'm getting to the point where when these people, and I mean these people in government, begin passing laws or, and becoming tyrannical about our rights, that they should bear some liability for bringing an unconstitutional law into being.
Once the Constitution is clarified, the problem is right now they can make a colorable argument that would defend them from violating their oath. But even though, to us is frivolous, to them, some of them have a good faith belief that they should be able to ban guns and it's not a constitutional violation. Look at Newsom, though he's coming to terms with this. This is him pushing his 28th Amendment, which would basically effectively eliminate the Second Amendment because it would take all the teeth out of it. They're grasping at straws to try and get, and that may not, elections have consequences. If the election changes the composition of red states or the Congress or the presidency, some of this stuff is going to get pushed through. There might be some new Supreme Court justices. The gun ban lobby is playing the long game here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's why they're letting all the illegal aliens in, aren't they?
Oh, to get the votes. Yeah. They know that they give people free stuff, they'll vote for you.
You know, we know that, especially in California. California just lost a congressional seat and is on par to, if this continues, if people continue to flee the state, lose potentially 5 more. But not if all these people are coming in, and irrespective of whether or not they ever get their citizenship, if they don't get their citizenship, they still are represented by congressional representatives. And that means that the numbers of people are what accord the congressional seats. So you've got floods of people coming in, even though American citizens left. You've got floods of illegal aliens coming in. They're still going to be counted in the census. They're still going to be counted for congressional seats. They will get representation and dilute the vote of those people who are legally able to vote. It is wrong and it's unconstitutional. And yet, here it is.
I'm going to let somebody else fight that battle. I agree with you, but I got my hands full with the Second Amendment right now.
Right on. I know. Yeah, there you go. Well, Chuck Bushell, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on today. And I
hope we can
do it again.
Thank you for helping get the word out. It's real important, very important that folks know about what's going on, that they know that this fight is about that methodology. That methodology, if it's nailed down, is going to be a game changer for us. And the California Rifle and Pistol Association and the Second Amendment Law Center are both out there on the front lines, along with our strategic partners at GOA and SAF and other groups. So we're doing the best we can. If folks can support those groups, you know, we get by on Bloomberg writes a check for $1 million. We get by on millions of people sending in $20. Well, actually not millions, but you whatever you can give, we appreciate it. And we'll put it to good use.
Yeah. Send money. Dear mom and dad, send money.
I hate to have to put my hand out, but you know, I mean, right now there's so many lawsuits, and I give we give the nonprofit rate to these groups, mm-hmm. Nobody's getting a big salary. There's no executive director, taking home hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're very frugal, and money is. The funds that we get from people who believe in our cause, we spend very wisely and very effectively.
Well, Godspeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Have you back anytime.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Adult in the Room podcast. To keep the programs you like to listen to, please rate this podcast with a fantastic 5 stars on your Apple Podcast app. Every time you listen, and give me a great review. Plus, of course, subscribe to the podcast. It makes a difference with the big tech algorithm and the big tech oligarchs, and it makes us easier to find. Please get in touch with me on all the big tech stuff. Yeah, we're still there. Using the names Victoria Taft or the Adult in the Room podcast on MeWe, Parler, Minds, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks to 1A Cast for imaging, editing, and production. The fantastic song is Gospel by the March 4th Band of Portland, Oregon. Music for Antifa versus Mike Strickland is Ride or Die by Raps by RC. The Adult in the Room podcast is also a production of Flamingo Road Studios. Remember, head up, heart out, and strive to be the adult in the room. Till next time, mischief managed.